Thank you. Morning, everyone. So last section of James's letter, we've been working our way over the last few weeks through the letter. If you've been here, you'll know it's full of practical instructions, things like what we say, how we can use our tongues for good or for not so good, or the need for our faith to result in practical care for those around us. The letter begins right at the start of chapter 1 by talking about the need to persevere in the face of difficulties. In chapter 1, verse 2, James writes, "Consider it pure joy, my brothers and sisters, whenever you face trials of many kinds, because you know the testing of your faith produces perseverance." And we see that James returns to this theme of perseverance and patience in the final chapter that James has just read to us. It's obviously something that he feels he needs to emphasize, maybe a reflection of the difficult times that his audience were going through. In fact, in this final section of the letter, James uses the words patience or waiting or perseverance 8 times in 5 verses. He starts with the illustration of the farmer who's planted seed and waits for it to grow. There's no quick fix, no instant sprouting. How patient are you? How patient am I? Well, I can only answer for myself, and the answer is not very. It's not helped by our culture of expecting instant answers. That's what we've become used to. You order online, you get next day or even same day delivery. You don't need to wait for fruit and vegetables to be in season. They come here all year round from all parts of the world. The pace of life is fast. It's online. The information is at our fingertips. We have instant communication. You don't have to wait for the postman to come. Waiting seems such a waste of time. But there are some things we can't speed up, like the farmer with his crops, or children growing into adults. If that is speeded up, it tends to be a bad thing. Or if you're learning a new skill, a language, the piano, it takes time, perseverance. I've recently started having some physiotherapy for my elbow. I've got tennis elbow. I want a quick fix. I want to be able to play tennis, but I know it will take time. I'll have to persevere with the exercises. I visited a friend last week whose daughter has just got her wings in the Navy as a helicopter navigator. The course she was doing was supposed to take 30 weeks, but it's actually taken her over 30 months. She got long COVID soon after she started the course, and she kept getting thrown off it because she couldn't keep up. But she kept going back, she kept persevering, because she valued what she was waiting for, what she was working towards. In James's context, he's writing to people who are waiting for, who are expecting Jesus' return. He mentions that 3 times in those early verses. Wait patiently, he says. James's readers were living in what are sometimes called the end times, the time between Jesus' life on earth and his second coming, his return in glory. And his readers were longing for Jesus' return because they knew it would mean he'd put all things right. It would be an end to oppression, it would be justice for all, and freedom from their sufferings. All the terrible, awful things that were going on in the world and in their own lives would be made right. Imagine that, everything made right. So understandably, they longed for it. And James is writing to encourage them to hang on in there, in their suffering, and to take encouragement from the Old Testament figures who had patiently endured suffering, persecution, rejection, and in the case of Job, the loss of everyone and everything he cared for. These people had persevered, and ultimately they were vindicated, even if not in this life. Even Job, in the end, had everything restored to him, family and possessions. Now, we may have less of a focus these days on Jesus' return. Perhaps we should have focus, as it must be nearer now, and we're told it will be when it's least expected. But we too are living in these end times, these in-between times, between Jesus' first coming to earth, bringing in the kingdom of God, and his return, when that kingdom will be fully established, when everything will be put right. And in the meantime, as we all know, we still live in an imperfect world where there is suffering and sickness and death, trials and tribulations that call for patience and perseverance. So how do we do that? How do we keep going when things are tough, when we're going through prolonged suffering, everything is against us, and there seems no end in sight? Well, two things that James points to in this passage that can help us. And the first is prayer. He states this very clearly in verse 13. He says, "Is anyone among you in trouble? Let them pray." That's straightforward enough. Maybe you're thinking, well, I've tried that and it didn't work. And that's certainly how I feel sometimes, perhaps often, especially with things that have been going on for a long time and don't seem to change. I've prayed for someone to get better and they haven't, or for a resolution to a bad situation that doesn't seem to improve. So when James says in verse 15, the prayer offered in faith will make the sick person well, and in verse 16, the prayer of a righteous person is powerful and effective, I do sometimes find these quite challenging. Now, when James talks about a righteous person, I don't think he means someone who is specially good, who never does any bad things. He uses righteous elsewhere in the letter to mean people who have an active faith, or as Paul in his letter to the Romans describes it, the righteousness that comes by faith, a righteousness that everyone who has faith in Jesus has. So please don't think that your prayers won't be effective because you're not righteous enough. But then why don't I get immediate answers to my prayers? I find it helpful to remind myself of the context that James was writing in. These people he's writing to were suffering. They were having to be patient and persevere. So they weren't able to sort everything out with a quick prayer. That's not what James is suggesting. There would be no need for perseverance if everything could be resolved in that way. Jesus told a story about a persistent widow in Luke's gospel. It was a story about the need to keep going in prayer. And Luke writes that Jesus told them the story to show them that they should always pray and not give up. So prayer isn't always going to be a quick fix. Back to my elbow. The physiotherapist has given me some exercises to do. I've been doing them for a couple of weeks now, and so far I haven't noticed any improvement. But I'm not giving up because I trust her that she knows what she's doing. Of course I want instant results, but the change will be slow, almost imperceptible. But I'm confident that change will happen, even if doubts do creep in. I know it's going to take time, that I need to keep going with the exercises. I just have to keep persevering. And that's true for us in prayer. I came across a reflection last week that I found helpful. The context was about growing confidence in faith, but I think it applies to the life of faith generally. It said, "It's important we're always open to the possibility of God doing something big and fast, because that sometimes happens. But much of the change God brings about in our lives comes through what Eugene Peterson was a theologian and pastor who wrote the Message translation of the Bible, what he calls a long obedience in the same direction. And the reflection was followed with a prayer that included these words, I do not presume that everything will happen in an instant, nor do I presume nothing will happen at all. Instead, I trust in your work, your slow and deep work. Despite the pain, despite the boredom, despite the disappointment, I receive your strength to keep going." I found that first sentence in particular so helpful in thinking about my praying. I do not presume that everything will happen in an instant, nor do I presume that nothing will happen at all. It's so easy to get discouraged when we think nothing is happening. But like the farmer James describes, waiting for his seed to grow, these are things going on that we can't see until one day we notice the shoots start to appear. We notice that change has started. We need to guard against the two extremes. On the one hand, unrealistic demands of God as though he's some genie there to satisfy our desires instantly. Or the unspoken assumption that our prayers have no effect. Maybe there's something that you've been praying for months or years. Don't give up, says James. Jesus taught us to pray, "Your will be done," in the Lord's Prayer. He prayed that himself in the Garden of Gethsemane when he struggled with the prospect of his suffering and agony on the cross. Abba, Father, everything is possible for you. Take this cup from me, yet not what I will, but what you will. Everything is possible for God, but the outcome we long for isn't always what's in God's best plan for us. And that's not a reason not to pray, but all the more to pray so that we can persevere in God's strength. And maybe in that process of persistent, consistent prayer, we come to a better understanding of God's will for the situation we're praying for. Are we willing to pray, "Your will be done," and to trust the outcome to God who is, as James describes him, full of compassion and mercy, God who wants the best for us? So prayer, that's the first pointer that James gives us in this passage. When things are tough, the tough and not so tough get praying. Let's persevere in prayer. Let's make time for it each day, even if it's only in a few snatched moments. The second pointer that James gives us is people, specifically the people of God, the church community or family. I chose the word people because it starts with P, because we've got perseverance and then we've got prayer and we've got people. James refers to brothers and sisters 5 times. Throughout this section, he's talking not to individuals in isolation, but to the community of God's people. So in verse 9, he warns them not to grumble with one another. We need to be patient with each other, persevere in difficult relationships, because it's so easy, especially when things aren't going our way, to find fault or want to blame others. Then he speaks of praying for one another. He firstly mentions the elders or leaders praying for people, but then everyone. Verse 16, he says, pray for each other, alongside confessing sins to one another. And finally, he speaks of the responsibility we have for one another if someone is wandering from the truth. We may or may not feel comfortable with some of these. Obviously, we need to be very careful before we start trying to correct others. In Matthew's Gospel, Jesus warns about noticing a speck in someone else's eye and ignoring the plank in our own. But all of these concepts of confession and prayer and being patient with each other, they all imply a closeness of fellowship, of mutual support, of concern and accountability, which is dependent on knowing and being known by one another, a willingness to make ourselves vulnerable. Perhaps we're good at the surface stuff, being nice to each other mostly, but sometimes struggle with anything deeper. It takes time to build relationships, to build the trust that enables us to be open about the things we struggle with, or to lovingly challenge one another. But this is the model for church, for the family of God, to love one another. And we know, don't we, that it does help when we're persevering to be in a body together persevering. I ran the London Marathon a long, long time ago. And I remember when I was training on my own, it was such hard work to keep going. But on the day of doing the marathon, when you're here with thousands of other people, it was so much easier just to keep going because you're surrounded by everyone else doing the same. So prayer and people, the two pointers that James gives us here to help in our persevering. Perseverance is about keeping going, not giving up. It's about developing patterns of living or habits that will carry us through. We've been thinking about some helpful habits on our Lent course, not about perseverance, but I won't expand on those now, but you can come to the final session on Thursday if you want to know more. So what habits are there that will help us in this area, help us to persevere? With prayer, what's your habit of prayer? Can you find a regular time each day, maybe at the start or end of the day or both? However small to start with. Maybe when you're travelling on the tube or cleaning your teeth or walking the dog. And there are some great apps that can help, like Lectio 365, which we've mentioned before, but there are others too. Being part of the people of God, what habits do we need to develop there? The writer of the Hebrews warns against giving up the habit of meeting together. Is it a habit to come to church each Sunday? And if not, what would it mean to make it more of a priority to come? Or what about joining a midweek group? It's a great way to deepen our fellowship, to know one another better. God calls us, if we're his followers, to be family together, not distant relatives, but brothers and sisters, as James has reminded us. What habits could we start today that will help us to pray? What habits that will deepen our sense of being family together? Let's take a moment to pause and ask ourselves, ask God to show us. Lord, thank you that you give us the gift of prayer to be able to come into your presence with our praise, our requests, our struggles. And thank you that you call us to live not in isolation, but to become your family, the people of God. Help us to persevere, to keep going in our praying, even when we don't see the change we long for, to keep trusting you for the outcome. Help us to encourage and pray for one another, to develop bonds of trust, so that we're not afraid to be real with one another, and so that we embody loving community in a way that draws others in. Amen.